Okay, I think we're ready to go, Kathy. We'll start our work meeting. I want to welcome everyone out and acknowledge all the city council in attendance. We'll begin with item 2.1, Anthem Development Agreement Update.
Okay, so Doug's here. He came to us about a month ago and showed us some changes to his plan. Since then, he's been talking to us and has some additional changes, and we thought it'd be worthwhile to have the council see these as we go forward, just so they kind of, whoops, not that bad, that bad.
This is the only city I have to put a clean shirt on so I can look appropriate in front of that camera. This will only take about 5-6 minutes to kind of go through this for everybody. What this is, and I've been working closely with staff and speaking with Jared, this is his area here. The main thing was that I extracted from talking to Jared and others is that we'd like to have some sort of a business area here. I met with the brokers, and they said that in this area, if we did a tech, you know, product development, business type area, about 35 acres, which would support about 200,000 square feet, would be adequate in this area here, and then a retail center here. These are the roads that Daybreak is building over here, and they're doing like 6 huge communities over here. These guys have more money than, I mean, they're just kabooming it. So you're going to see massive amounts of housing over in this area here. This is what they've got going in right now, which represents, literally thousands of units going in. But what's going to happen is you got the Smiths here, but all these people coming off Mountain View are going to hit here, and they're going to come over, and they're going to connect here. They're going to hit here, come over, and connect here. They're going to find that Smiths is just a bypass location. The great thing that we have with our Walmart is you come down here, and this comes right into the city. So the city did some great planning here. And so this is going to be ideal for the Walmart. These guys are going to be kind of the Lone Ranger over here. But what we thought is in this zone, or in the master plan, which hasn't really been adopted yet, we had a baseline of 685 units for this whole 300 acres, I call it. On the up end, you've got about 1,171 units on this area here, depending on, you know, parks or anything. So if you went in and just did raw subdivision here, you put this all in half-acre lots, put this in basically third-acre lots, and you had a little bit of townhome type product up here, the units would be 685, but you just get basically a raw subdivision. Then I looked at it and said, what happens if we, you know, add the 40-acre park? It kicks it up to 1,171. This just takes it to the top level. Then I looked at it and said, well, we'll just put a little bit of commercial in. We just left the lots the same, but you can see what happens is the lots around the commercial just become a little bit smaller. This always stays the same to maintain its integrity against Heritage Place here. And then this was the last map that I came up with that I'm passing on to you. This is what the R&D centers look like. They do these nice buildings. It's a work-oriented station. It's more of a millennial type atmosphere. It's really impressive. They felt like they could start marketing it immediately. And so what we did here is we just put in the 50 acres of commercial with the tech center. And then what that does is this remains the same type housing. This goes into little cottage homes here, and this creates a townhome type community here, or the single family detached 3-story product that we have here. So basically, what I tried to do is maintain the same density, but where you get a little bit of compression is you just get a little bit different kinds of units here. And I gave everybody a copy of the map, and I thought it would be interesting for your review to just kind of look at that and think about that. And then hopefully I can get some direction from you. If you have some direction you can give me tonight, if I'm going in the right direction, if you like what you see, if there's other areas that I need to focus on. I haven't done any neighborhood meetings or anything yet because I thought I'd kind of get your input, get your luck, your buy-in, so to speak, and then we'll take you to the neighborhood, see if they're comfortable with it, and then kind of go from there.
So when we went to the retreat, one of the things that was talked about was an economy kind of looking at job creation, the housing and the retail. So what this does by letting them keep the units is that incentivizes the commercial. In other words, if we take away the units, then it's less incentivized. That's what the discussion is about. So we don't want to, we want to make sure we're going down the path that everybody's looking at, if that's reasonable or unreasonable, or what we're thinking
about. But it's the high end of the units, that's the top end.
It is the top
low
end.
Right. Right. So if you look at the low end, the 665, he could do that, but there's no park, no commercial. So we have that ability, and that's the low end, just a straight subdivision. So if we want to do the straight subdivision, we can just do that. But if we want to, you know, get the park, we've got to start raising the units. So that's kind of the cutoff. If we want to do a straight subdivision or we want to do a PUD, that's, I guess, what I'm looking at.
My initial reaction is you look at 2, 3, and 4, and the units don't change at all.
Right.
You just squeeze them all into a smaller space. I mean, without going to anybody at the moment, I would have to venture to say most residents would say we'll take the smaller lots and less commercial.
Okay.
So, I mean, something that we need to discuss and look at. But, you
know. So you're thinking not the commercial as much? Is that kind of what I'm hearing? Or?
Not so much. I mean, we as a city, we want more commercial, but, I mean, the trade-off. I mean, if you're looking for an answer right now today.
Probably not an answer today, but we'd like to just have you think about it. Maybe you can get back to us next week or so we can let them know if this is.
What I'd like to know is the units, for me, separate discussion for just a minute, because I know that's the most controversial part of this. I would like to know, by way of the research you've done with the brokers, what kind of job creation we're possibly looking at. What kind of revenue generation we're looking at with the commercial you're talking about, because, of course, I'm interested in the residents that live just around that, naturally, as we all are, but we also have to maintain a global view of sustainability for the city. And there's only so many areas that make sense for commercial development and for office and daytime traffic, which we all agree is something we have to have. So before I dismiss anything, particularly something that is on one of our areas that make good sense for commercial and office development and daytime traffic, I want to know what we're looking at and how that plays into the overall equation of the sustainability of our city. So if you can come up, and I know you've had good conversations with the brokers from what you've just said.
Yeah.
So they've got to have some sense of what the need is out
yeah.
there. I've seen some of these millennial centers that you're referring to, you know, up in Utah County in that area. And to be able to have that niche in Harriman would be fantastic, simply because they have some disposable income. It makes our demographic different. It helps us compete with South Jordan, frankly, that's carving out a bit of a niche with eBay and those kinds of things. So I certainly would not be ready to dismiss this solely on units. I think we always want to have more of a discussion with you on units. My interest lies in what you're bringing to the commercial and the daytime traffic, because that is what we absolutely need as a city.
I have an analysis done. They can probably, it might take a week or two. We'll talk to Susie Becker and then her son, Benj, who is doing all the Draper, but the prison side, he's probably renowned, the number one guy in the state, for sure. And I'll do some analysis on that. I appreciate that input.
Well, I don't want to be in a rush. This has to be done right.
Right.
I think we all agree. This has to be done right. We need to make a decision with all of the data at our fingertips so that we know what it is we're saying yes or no to, frankly.
Yeah.
I
was just going to say, along those lines, traffic.
Always.
Beating the drum, what would the traffic count be? Where would the traffic flow be? Where would the roads go? Same thing, we've got all the schools. One corner. We can't just think about commercial and jobs. We got tons of kids right there.
Doug, the question I had was at one time on this northern end of that 300 acres, we were looking at retirement type homes and such. Are you still? Because one of the issues with the neighborhood was there was the impact on schools, and if retirement is going to be kind of an emphasis for that type of housing.
It was going to be in here still. That was the 55-age target. It was still going to remain in
here. How many units of senior housing?
It looks about 800.
About where?
In this area right here.
See, now, to me, that does make a difference, getting back to Jared's point, because, again, then your impact on schools decreases dramatically. We've all talked about there being a different feel with the senior community, you know, versus another type of higher density community. So, I mean, I think keeping your eyes on that market
yeah.
are really important. I just got out of an aging meeting with the county an hour ago, and they are beating the drum constantly that not only do we not have enough inventory to meet the need that we have currently existing, but the inventory in the track isn't keeping up at all with the projected need as we become an aging community. So, again, the need does not diminish at all, and all the buildings on the west side. And so developers and cities need to work together to try and meet a need for a demographic that needs to have options.
Right.
And I think are great neighbors, frankly. So.
Yeah. Well, they like to be close by commercial, and they like to be walkable. Mm-hmm. And that's what you do. You come in and master plan this area. You give a variety of housing. You have these little cottage-type homes, which they like, with main floor master. And you have some other types of products. And you just do a nice blend. Ivory's doing very well in Daybreak, but everybody I talk to says the seniors over there, they're just buying it because that's what's available. And they don't really like the products.
Hey, Doug, I know we talked about 2 or 3 weeks ago about doing a study for senior housing in that area for that type of product.
Right. That won't be done for about another 40, about, I'm guessing between another 2 to 3 weeks on that study. But
okay.
Nicole gave us some great input from the county of the studies and different things that have been going on there. But I'll follow up with that since with the others.
Okay. This is just
what I was hoping to be able to do is kind of put this one with the other, but we've got to get the road built over there for the elementary school. So what we've done over there is we on the elementary site on the 60 acres we refer to it as, we'll bring a we'll get a development agreement put together on that. We'll have to do this one separate because this is going to take quite a bit more time. We're going to just do the 179 units like everybody is seems to be happy with, and we'll get that development agreement to the city. I think it's already been emailed out here, and we'll get it to you, to the council.
Just a clarification on the 179, though. Are you backing out the amount for the church and other things? I think that was a significant...
I think that there was a... we need to look at that. We need to make sure that that's been accounted for. I think it was accounted for early on. So we'll take a look at that. I'll check with Bryn and make sure we're okay.
That will be helpful. And just to have that clear history documented
yeah.
so that we can not only understand for ourselves, but explain to the residents
yeah.
why whatever number we come to is the right number is
okay.
critical. I would want to see a development agreement without it.
Okay. Thank you. I'll make sure they do that. Any other comments or thoughts on this stuff? Okay. Yeah, you're okay. Thanks.
Well, and Doug, I'll just say I like that you're continuing to work with the city. I like that you're willing to continue neighborhood meetings. I think that's very important, bringing the residents along the way as we look at the various iterations that we've gone through. So I think the continued conversation is helpful. At the end of the day, we'll have a better product because we've continued to talk.
I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. The more time we take on, the better.
Yeah, I think it'll be great. All
thank
right.
you for your good
thank
work.
You,
thanks,
everybody.
Doug.
Hey, Doug, can I get the pointer?
Oh, it goes with the screen.
That just belongs to the recorder, and should
you. Thank you.
The best part of this discussion is I'm 56, and I keep hearing how desirable 55 and older is. Every conversation that comes up, I've never felt this much love in any... Sorry.
Yeah.
That didn't... Is this recording?
Okay, Wasatch Development Agreement.
Okay. Whoops.
Yeah, it's recording.
All right. Brandon, do you want to start
yeah.
with the sign?
Yeah.
So we're going to go over three things. We're going to talk about John Lindsay's over there. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about three things. There's lots of stuff going on, but right now you're only going to hear about three. One of them is the signs that they're talking about, so you kind of get a feel for it. And what's happening. Number two is the development process that we're going to modify in the development agreement. give you some information on that. And then three, we're looking at financing 150th South, and we'll explain a little bit of the strategic strategy on that and why that's important.
So the signs.
Do you want a pointer?
I'll point
for you.
We've talked several times about how the facility will want a couple signs out on Mountain View. Currently, our ordinance does not allow off-premise signs, so we've been kind of working through that issue. One of the things that they've been working on, we kind of tasked them to figure out how we could do this, is legislation to change a public assembly facility, I believe is what it's called, from 10,000 seats down to 5,000 seats, and then they would fall under a public assembly facility by definition, under the state. That would allow us, then, if we choose to change our ordinance to say public assembly facilities that meet this requirement could then have these types of signs. We would also likely do it as an amendment to the development agreement to tie it in a couple different ways. Because, again, like we talked about, we don't want billboards. We don't want everybody to get signs like these. But John Brems and I feel pretty comfortable that if we would basically change our ordinance to allow these type of public facilities to have off-premise signs. But again, you'd have to meet those requirements to be a 5,000-seat public facility, you know, so it's not, and everybody could do that, and if they did, we would probably give them a sign. I mean, so John and I have been trying to think through all of the potential problems with that, but.
And this is the unified commercial development.
It falls under that, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. Where, I was just checking with the lobbyists to see where we were. Where is that at up at the session? What's the support of that so far?
All indications are that it's favorable, and we don't see any opposition to that, but I haven't received any current update as of the last couple of days, to be honest with you. So I know that it's still being proposed, and we're still looking at it, but we don't anticipate there being much issue.
And the concept makes perfect sense, but it's that on-premise, off-premise,
right.
Making a clear distinction, lowering the number of seats, and then dealing with that issue of the bisecting roads, which is ridiculous. Of course, you should be able to have, you know, shared signage for a single development.
So. Sure. And our intentions are not to open this billboard up to just any advertiser. This is going to be people that are specific to the training facility and RSL organization that is supporting the public facility.
The same similar sign as is in Sandy.
Correct.
So yeah, going to go to the
sponsors.
Next.
Yeah.
Correct.
This is basically what the sign looks like. And going to go, they kind of go to rendering so you can see going down.
That ball looks familiar.
Coming up Mountain View, you can kind of see what the two signs would look like.
These signs are currently erected in Orem on along I-15.
Yeah.
So if you want an actual visual, we're duplicating the plans on this. They're much more attractive than a single post looking sign. It has like a copper look to the arch to it. And you can see we've done some work to lay out what visually it'll look like.
John, how high is that? What's the height?
You know, I
can say like
50. Keep in mind, it's because they sit down off the floor.
Yeah. That's 75 feet.
One says 75, one says 49.5.
50.
Well, you add those three, you get 75.
Yep, top to bottom.
Yeah, you've got to get it higher because the corridor is going
to
sit.
Yeah, because if you go to the rendering, you can see they kind of sit below the road. Yeah. And then this is the sign they're just roughly proposing, I think, for just kind of out on the road entrance as you come in.
Which is nice. Iconic.
Yes.
That's exactly what
I like
want
it.
For that.
To give you a rough idea of what this costs for us to build already, it's about $1 million for this sign. So it's not a cheap sign by any means.
We don't want you going with
real gold.
No, no.
Why sure?
No.
You go here and take a selfie. That's what that's about.
It's an iconic sign.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah.
So again, we just wanted to make sure you guys are on board with that. Like I said, the legislation, if that goes through, we will need to change our ordinance to kind of fall in line with that. So we'll likely, if it all sounds good, we'll probably start working on that because that will take, you know, a month or so to get through. Because it'll have to go through planning commission, and usually that'll take a little while, so we'll probably get that going if that's the direction we're all okay with. Like I said, then these will all be amendments to the development agreement. We want to, again, tie it in as many ways as we can to keep.
You have to have development group.
Keep everybody.
500, you know, seats.
Yeah.
We'll give those kind of lists.
Yeah. Good. And then the next one.
Are you lending your support? I know you're lending your support to the legislation that's moving forward very visibly.
Yes, we've hired a lobbyist also.
And we're supported by our lobbyist on this one.
So the next one, this is not an exciting slide, but the next one, this is just the process. In their development agreement, they were vested under the 2008 ordinances and processes and standards, which is mostly fine, except we didn't really nail down what just the development process was, you know, subdivisions, planning commission, all that process. So this is really more than anything just to help us and the developer, you know, give guidelines as far as what they have to submit and what the planning commission will be getting and all that. It doesn't change our process in any. I believe you had it in your packets, if not, I have hard copies. But
I believe this is a help for the planning commission and the developer in particular to understand the sequencing of submissions and the like. I think that's been, as I've been attending planning commission meetings, there's been just some uncertainty. So I think it's just intended to clean that up.
It is, because as you know, they have a development agreement which does give them some certainty, right. And the planning commission's like, what can we ask for? What are you going to give us? It's just been a little bit. This should help clarify for everybody what they have to submit, what we're looking at. So one meeting is our goal, right, Tom?
Correct.
This would be very helpful.
Yes. Exactly. So, we want to streamline the process. Yeah. So you know what we're going to bring, and we know what to bring, and we're on the same page. We go through, and we don't have multiple meetings tying up everybody's time.
Yeah, so. And you've been very patient. So thank you for your patience. I go through that. So.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
The Lord visited us and brought us a bucket of chicken. So I'm just telling you.
Where's ours?
Oh, we have that here.
The boy's not here. It's a little moldy.
So again, this is no real change in the process. It doesn't really affect you guys all that much. It just really helps us be able to work through the process.
Has the Planning Commission had a chance to maybe get eyes on it?
They did. The Planning Commission had it at their last work meeting. They actually made a couple little changes, which we've worked through. So they've kind of signed off on it, too. Yeah.
We've taken it through them, then we'll bring it to you so they get the full vetting of it.
How's the sewer thing going?
It's going.
That's a long discussion.
Is that a stinky subject?
How much time do you have?
That wasn't one.
There is chicken out there.
There is chicken. There's some easements that are still.
We're working on some right of ways. They need. If you want to explain it, you can. But it's Jordan.
The water district needs to grant us the ability to install the sewer in front of the property, and that's becoming a little challenging. So we're hopefully working through that.
All right. So those were the first and the simplest things. So I want to talk about, this is the Real area. This is their phase two.
Yeah.
If you look at this road, right here is where we're building our pump station. This is the Welby Jacob Canal. This is the Mountain View Corridor. This is Kim Reynolds' box commercial piece.
We're got two chickens loose over there.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about that. What we have here is 1530s west. South. That I don't want to get on camera and say anything I don't want, so it's just gonna come to here. Anyway, the point being is this next year we're going to be adopting a new capital facility plan that's going to make that a 66-foot wide road. It's good because it accesses the commercials, some of the housing, and this pump station, which is going to have a lot of visitors. Anyway, so we would like John to build the capital facility road. He was more than happy. In fact, he designed it that way. However, the city can't reimburse him with impact fees because we haven't adopted capital facility. And lo, he wants to build it, what do I know, next week. So we're saying, yeah, go ahead, but we can't give you any money for it. And he said, well, what can we do? So that was the meeting the boy came to, and he talked to us for a few things. And there's a couple ideas that generated out of that meeting, and we wanted to run a couple of them by you. So here's the thought. The city would get a capital facility road. Right now, all our money is tied up, so we can't give him any money. Right, Alan? Okay. So, however, at some point, they would like to be reimbursed for doing that. Now,
which we would do with any developer.
Any developer.
Let's just be clear. We're not asking for anything. We wouldn't get to
no,
any
No, this is
developer.
Any developer. And because they're building above and beyond what we'd have them do. And so what would happen is, before the impact fees, developers would build the road and they would have a reduction of some fee and build something to put it in. Now we have these impact fees, and the idea would be on phase two,
four, and two.
What would happen is the city can, if it, because it's in the ordinance, can just say, we're going to waive the impact fees for this subdivision, to the amount that just happens to be the cost of this road. They're not tied, they're not related, it can just happen. He builds the road, and we waive that. It can come back in the development agreement, come back in a number of different ways. I've worked with John a little bit on this. I haven't spent much time with Alan. But what we can do...
But it's sixes at the end of the day.
It's sixes because we get the road. So if this is something you're comfortable with all these development agreement changes, I'm going to bring you back something that I've talked to Alan more in detail about. John understood it, so we just...
What do we use to make certain that the impact fees we're giving up is equivalent to the request?
It's in the development. He has to send us the actual bills from the contractor. So, so we have an estimated amount, but if the contract is less than that, he just gets less. He only can be paid for what he pays for.
We just have to make certain that's documented. And
he sends us these stack of bills every time. It's wonderful to see him. And we have to go through them, so we do that. So every time he gets a draw, he has to send us all his backup of what he spent. So that's all I want. So today you're not doing anything other than telling us to do some work. And we're going to go do some work.
March on.
Anything else?
Yeah.
No.
John, thank you. We appreciate a good relationship with you, and
likewise.
Excited about what's going on. So.
Absolutely.
Is the roof going on, by the way?
It is.
Red?
We got to go with the roof real quick, because we got to start working on all the solar that goes on that side.
I flew over Saturday and looked down, and it was red.
You will not miss this building once all the shells put on.
Okay, 2.3, discussion relating to the appointment of a hearing officer.
Is the hearing officer here?
Be here.
I need a new facial recognition.
You're on now.
Okay.
Thanks,
so,
John.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Why did I start here?
I haven't met you before, so you just look like a person that would be a judge. A good judge get a judge. So,
if I get a pay raise, I'll do it.
Gordon, but you have met him before. I think
that's okay, so let me just tell you. John, so we changed the ordinance, or we talked about changing the ordinance on the animal control so we could issue civil citation. We're starting to be more aggressive on vehicle citations where...
So animal control and code enforcement...
Actually, it's less
aggressive. Civil citations.
But
and we need the hearings officer to be able to...
Yeah,
we're
so Greg Christiansen.
Right, he was brought... He was... He's the,
John picked somebody.
He was the hearing officer in Taylorsville. Our code is very similar to theirs. And so he was supposed to be here to introduce you because what we wanted to do in 2 weeks was bring him back for ratification. And John told me he'd be here, and I even spoke to him on the phone. And I had never seen him, and so I was so focused on this meeting.
Is there somebody else you want to pull in?
Maybe he's mitigating deer. That's
there's a kid over here in a red sweatshirt. He'll be our hearings officer. Okay, well let me do this. We talked. He's an attorney. He had good credentials, but we'll have John reintroduce him to you next week. And so John had to be in Disneyland today or something. So
we feel confident with
his. I am a little embarrassed.
He's been doing it.
I did talk to him. He was supposed to be here, and I was going to, but I didn't know what he looked like.
What is the fee?
What's the cost? It was like It's like our current one. It was.
It's very cost effective.
It was like $150
a day to church.
Citation.
Yeah.
He's a bargain.
How many citations do we get?
Well, so far, zero.
But how many do we normally have this necessity?
Oh, so what we're doing is we're now being more proactive. So now that we're stepping up, we still may never have any. People that pay the fine, they will never do it. So it's based upon just people that challenge
it. New.
Now, we already have an amount budgeted for our appeals authority. I think it's like $10,000. We've never used it all. And so I think we wouldn't change the budget. It would be the same amount. So he only gets paid when he comes in to do a hearing on something. So
he's not getting paid today, let's be clear.
He didn't show up. Yeah. All right, I'm embarrassed.
If Taylorsville has been doing this for a while, what are they seeing as far as number of citations?
They have a lot because they have more code enforcement officers and they're very aggressive. So they have a lot. They have them almost every month there, a couple times a month there doing hearings. We won't be that high.
It's the same, almost equal to the police officer elevation over that.
Are they using county animal control? Do they have their own?
Right now they go with West Valley City, and they're looking at an opportunity to come back to county services because West Valley City is only 4 days a week, and they don't go on nights and weekend pickup, and it's really discouraging. And also they're not a live shelter, they're a kill shelter. So here's what residents are clamoring against that. I didn't change.
I thought they got their no kill status.
The what?
I thought they got their no kill status.
What's that?
Yeah.
They might have just got it, but the biggest issue is they're not responding after hours on weekends, and the county doesn't respond 24/7.
We're going to be a little more proactive on the civil side with our code enforcement and with animal control. So we don't know that people won't just comply and do their thing, but if they need due process if they want to complain, and we need to have that already set up. And he only comes in, he only gets paid when he comes in and does a hearing. So it's,
and we already have an amount budgeted.
Yep.
And we'll be educating along the way as well with this new process. So
which is ultimately the idea. Allows our officers to stay, our police officers to stay more to police work versus these civil offenses that, you know, parking street grades, snow time, inland snow, traders, those little violations that really should be not criminal, should be civil.
We had this where I came from, and it was actually a revenue generator. It actually produced more than it cost. Not a great deal, but it's a little bit.
Oh, is he here?
Yeah.
I told him. Sure,
Gordon. Go introduce yourself, Gordon.
Hey, yes,
that's the driver's license.
Is this the AM meeting? I'm in the right place. Well, we're getting drawn away to somebody else.
We are streaming live on Facebook.
Oh, great. I didn't know what he looked like,
so I found another gentleman out there. They gave him the job.
No, it's funny because it's true. So, Gordon, we ought to introduce ourselves since we're
on the let's crisis. Go ahead. We have the mayor here. Members of the city council, we have
Mayor Freeman,
Nicole Martin, Corley Moser, Craig Tishner, and Jared Henderson, and our city manager,
Brett
Wood.
Such a bad idea to give Gordon that.
Okay, all those introductions. All right, could you just tell us a little, I introduced you as Taylorsville's code enforcement officer. They had questions about maybe, we may have a little different situation here, but just how many violations you hear per month and kind of that, just your experience.
Sure, for sure. And again, I apologize for
I take this chair and tap the council, so go ahead.
Oh,
we want to get you on the microphone.
Yeah. Oh, great. Okay.
Seats all warm.
Now that I know it's recorded.
What's your name? I'm sorry.
Should I tell you?
Yes.
Greg Christiansen is my name. So I own and operate a law firm by the name of Guardian Law. Been practicing, born and raised in Utah, grew up in Sandy, live in Draper. You know, my partner and I went to law school in Spokane, Washington. Nice Jesuit school, Gonzaga. So for those of you who are
number one in basketball right now.
We're not doing too bad. If you're a Cougar fan, I'm sorry. My law partner went to Georgetown, so two Jesuit schools on the opposite side. We grew up in Sandy. We decided to start a law firm. So we've been practicing here in Utah for the last 14 years. About 6 years ago, the city of Taylorsville approached me because they had a they wanted to enforce some ordinances, clean up the city, and make sure that it stays beautiful. And so they had me come in and sat down with the Mayor Wall at the time, who's now left and works for the county. John was the city attorney at the time. Mr. Morgan was also the city manager there at the time. They've left them working with individuals at the city now. But so we went, we looked at the code, we made some modifications to try to put some teeth in it. One of the biggest issues with code enforcement is actually having the ability to enforce the provisions which are in the ordinances and finding a way to make and encourage people to do it. The purpose of city enforcement and code enforcement is the beautification, first and foremost. It's not to get people to pay a lot of money in fines. I do this not because it's a big profit maker for my business, but because I love it, and it gives me an opportunity to provide a civic responsibility for people. So when individuals meet with me, I first mention what the purpose of it is. Now, that doesn't mean that there doesn't need to be teeth in things, because when you are too lax with what we provide, people will take abuse of it. And we'll have cars parked on lawns, and we'll have individuals who put flamingos on top of the roofs. I'm being a little facetious, but there's some, you'll have individuals leasing out their property when they don't have the right to do so, and then they have tenant problems, in which various cities run into different problems, like having foreclosure problems and other things, and the banks don't take care of the properties, and it makes the values of the community go down. So I'm giving you a kind of a background and explanation of the great purpose of that is because we want to make sure that we make all the city residents, the values of their homes go up. We want to make sure that that maintains a good community service for them. So when it comes to volume of cases, it really does vary. My case volume in Taylorsville right now is anywhere between 5 to 20 a month. We can handle those cases. We do one hearing once a month where we have them all come in. And those range...
They just come in your office? Where they go?
They go to City Hall. So they have a council room that they meet. They also have a courthouse there. So whether that's available, I can sit in there. We record the meetings. I send out notifications. Taylorsville has a notification process, and I know that's something that we would want to implement. You want to see it here, where we give them a courtesy notice. Hopefully they respond to that. We have an opportunity to remedy the situation well before I get involved. If that notice comes back and they haven't done anything, we send out a notice of violation. It gives them a second chance to try to remedy the problem. If they don't correct it on the notice of violation, then the hearing is scheduled for them to come in. An invoice is sent for violations pursuant to the code, and then we sit down and we have a hearing where I give them the opportunity to explain why they haven't followed through with making the adjustments pursuant to the notifications, or what mitigating circumstances arose that caused, you know, they had a stroke and were in the hospital and they just couldn't do it. So I take all that into account. If they don't have a great excuse, then there are hard costs because you're employing city code enforcement officers, you're employing attorney, maybe that's doing an administrative law judge, you have a city attorney, and other functions as well. So we always assess some sort of fee that goes with it. That minimum fee may change from there, but we normally discuss that beforehand and come up with what the base threshold is. Violations accrue over time, so the city of Taylorsville has a maximum fine amount of $5,000 per violation. Some people have 3 or 4 violations, so they could have a $20,000 fine if they don't respond. You would think that gets attention when you get an invoice for $20,000. It doesn't. And so we included in the provision in the code in Taylorsville to allow us to lien the properties. So we assess it like it's a violation, like a fine, like the city is assessing a fine, which is not a dischargeable route, right, pursuant to bankruptcy. It gets people's notice because when we do that, at the end of the year, the mortgage company will have the liens off of the property if there are any that are associated. So a lot of times, mortgage companies will pay that, and then they'll raise the mortgage amount to the homeowner. And that does get their attention. I think in December of last year, I think the city of Taylorsville had collected over $120,000. For people just not responding. Now, some of that is bank foreclosures, right? Mm-hmm. So the bank takes over the property. They don't care. They don't maintain it. It's their asset, but they don't make sure it's beautified. And we put the lien on the property, and they know they've made a mistake, and they pay it. They pay it. And there could be ongoing violations if they don't correct it, but depending on the statute or code that we put in, we don't have to cap it out at $5,000. It's been pretty successful. I've been doing it for 6 years, for Taylorsville now. We've had some changes. The program only works as strong as this body is behind it. I found with changes in mayors, there's been a lot of flip in mayors over the last few years in Taylorsville since Mayor Wall left. So there's been a lot of adjustment of explaining what the value of the program is and having support from the council and from the mayor's office. We have a good mayor there now that understands the value of it, so there's some good support and throwing some assets towards that. But it only works as if there's support and backing and documentation from here. So
the extent of your service in terms of animal, it's just not dogs off a leash, it's
everything.
Can it be horses on a sidewalk?
Anything under the code. We in Taylorsville, is that
Illegal? But we'll have to pass the code that you can't.
Yeah, can horses go on a sidewalk?
It looks. We'd have to look at our code right now. I don't see anything that says they're supposed to pick up, but we may want to have that code.
Yeah. The first thing I would do is assess what your animal code section is.
That's all up to this body's decision.
The state has certain. The state has laws, and then the code is pretty broad. The state laws are pretty broad. I mean, anything from chicken violations to having a rooster in certain certain places crowing at 5:30 a.m. to dogs being loose to horses to goats and donkeys. So I mean, we've handled pretty much anything. And it just depends on what's.
So what he's saying too is we'll just look at our code with him and. Make sure we have all the stuff picked up that we want to do. If there's more things that the council wants us to...
Well, I think it ought to personally go through the council first to see to what we'd like to see enforced, and then it goes. Is that the
Well, it's already in place.
Well, we ought to review it.
If you'd like, we can bring that back to you.
Because there may be some who say, we've done the chickens, right?
But we still will reinforce on roosters.
Well, one thing that I would like to see come out of this is maybe not necessarily a study, perhaps, but something that has some information of what we've dealt with in the past that could be a civil fine, and kind of compile that data together versus and our cost of what this is going to cost us, so we can have an analysis of to compare to kind of see what we're getting to. Because by all means, I don't want to be a cash cow for this either. Education first is...
Yeah, the intent, just to make sure, we don't see this making money for us, like, real clear. So what we see is working with people so that they take care of their problem. That's going to be the biggest issue. And so if money's generated through fines, that's not what we intended for this.
Well, I like your point of it's all about protection of neighborhoods. I mean, your home is your single biggest investment. And it's very frustrating when you're in a neighborhood and even have one person who has no respect for the ordinance in the city in which they chose to live. And by extension, it is hurting your property values, which is not fair and not right. So for me, it has little to nothing to do with the money other than the fact that it serves as an incentive for them to do what they should do without the fines.
And the biggest thing, it becomes civil, not criminal.
Right.
Yeah,
that's actually trying to work with the residents.
Right.
And I just have a curiosity question.
Sure.
Maybe based off your history and experience, have you ever had to build any apartments or anything like that?
So Taylorsville has a good tenant policy and a registration policy for landlords. And so I deal with all of the unregistered landlords in Taylorsville. So if you find that there's somebody who's leasing out property, let me give you an example. We have a home in Taylorsville that the owner actually subdivided the home, made it into a condo, and have three separate families in there. And so, of course, that came before me, and we handled the issue. Because obviously it wouldn't have been approved, and single-family home, three families, and there's health issues that are involved. So we've handled all of those issues. I would suggest, and I'm not as familiar with Harriman's code about landlord-tenant relationships, but it seems like it's a pretty good policy and to have them register, so at least you can track to see what's going on. Here's another issue, is if you have a high landlord or tenant issue and they're not following the code and there's violations, Taylorsville holds the landlord responsible, period. Because if you have a transient area where there's a lot of landlords and something happens and they're not maintaining a park down the lawn or they're not mowing the lawn or whatever it is, then the tenant doesn't care. Especially if in their lease agreement it says the landlord's going to take care of it, they don't care. They're there short term and they're gone. The landlord should. And so I always hold the landlord responsible for that. I don't know if that answered your question, but that's.
Okay, I'm just looking for some ideas or some experience that you may have had with apartment complexes specifically and problems that you've had to deal with and had the teeth to enforce such ordinances.
It all goes to the ownership. So if there's a management group or ownership group, then that's who I deal with. So the short of it is, yes, I've had those issues. I don't deal with the tenants of the apartment complex. I deal with the owners. Because there's no way a month-to-month lease or even a year lease, they don't care. That's in my experience.
Well, they have the ability to kick them out if they want to.
They can evict, and then that's how it remains the issue. So the landlord always has so much more. And in Utah, there's a strong emphasis on landlord. So that's why I push it for landlords. If you're unhappy with the tenant, then evict them. Cancel the lease.
Well, and we're a younger community. I don't anticipate that we're going to have near the issues, near the citations of the Taylorsville. But what I like about this is neighbor or cities age. And as they age, there you see a decline inevitably in the quality and the look and feel of the neighborhood, unless you're very vigilant. And unless you're educating your residents as to the standards that are expected in your city. So for us to start out with a process that is establishing that standard and expectation, and frankly, again, it's for the property values of everybody who chooses to live in our city. So I like that we are looking at this early on as a young city and establishing, you know, the teeth for these things, because everybody benefits by a city that maintains itself well.
Let me give you an example. I mean, so I've helped with West Valley, and I'm not trying to disparage any city, but West Valley...
Use as an example.
As an example. As an example. Subdivision from subdivision in West Valley is extremely different. And it's a problem with that because of the way they try to enforce that. One, you'll drive down the street, and there'll be beautiful manicured lawns, and the next street, you'll feel like you're out of some suburb of L.A. And the city's trying, but I think the culture they created from the beginning has been very hard to overcome. Maryland has done a great job of trying to overcome that, but it's a challenge. Taylorsville is kind of an in-between. They kind of border Kearns. They have some older subdivisions, but they've got some newer areas too. So it's been an interesting. Their biggest dilemma has been the foreclosure problem over the last 4 or 5 years. And even here, I think that's potentially, even new communities, you're going to run into that. And how the banks really come in and take over, or if you have squatters they're sitting on and they're just not doing anything on the properties, I think that potentially could be one of your biggest issues here.
This solves that issue, because you'll get it the revenue stream that is needed to maintain that property.
Absolutely.
And kind of ties some of that to the other councilman answers. Most of the rental stuff that we see is not like an apartment complex. We actually have pretty good relationships with those management people that we can go in and say, here's what we're doing. Where we have the problem is kind of what he laid out, where like when we had a whole bunch of foreclosures and a whole bunch of stuff, people came in or banks came in and they bought all those houses and they rent them out. But they don't do background checks, and they don't do, so anybody that's going to pay, they'll just put them in there. And then
it's a general area, you
see it decline, and so they don't need a business license. We don't have a list where they have to register saying that they're renting that out. So we try, from a police perspective, to get in there, but when you're dealing, he's exactly right, when you're dealing with the tenant, you don't get anywhere. You have to get to the landlord. And so as long as we can hold that, this gives teeth back to us to say, you're going to fix this, or we're going to make it very unpleasant for you. So.
Okay. Good. So what we'd like to do is, in 2 weeks, we bring you back, because it's like the council and the mayor have to hire this guy. So we'll be bringing you back. You don't need to come back. And then John will talk to you, and we'll let you guys think about that. I think we're happy to try to get him on board.
Do you have any other questions? Anything I haven't addressed that you'd like to answer? Well, I appreciate your time, and again, I apologize.
If you think of some, let us know. We'll grill in for you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go to item 2.4, Anthem Community Development Update. Okay, Heather?
Hello. So I just wanted to update you all on the CDA. I'm sure you're aware of most of this, but so I'll be brief. So the few approvals we have so far, we have South Valley Sewer has approved the CDA and their interlocal. We did meet with Jordan Valley Water today. Their board approved the interlocal.
At what participation percentage?
Both of those were 75%. We've met with the county staff. We're still waiting to be scheduled with the county council. The mayor has been briefed there on the CDA, and we've been told that he's supportive of it. So we're just waiting to be scheduled on that one. We've met with the UPD staff and that one. So they came back, and we originally had their participation rate was at 40%.
Is that what we asked for?
Yeah, based on our last one, okay. They were comfortable with 40%. After they did their analysis of the commercial center, they came back with a 0% participation rate.
That's unfortunate.
So they would need 1.7 something officers to support that center. So they need the tax in order to have the officers.
Yeah, so what it is, it build out, or I think just even the Walmart, they need one full officer.
With the Walmart.
And the full amount that the property tax would generate for Slovisa was 0.6 officer. So they were saying that even at full build out, they didn't have enough to get the one officer, and then at full build out, they need two, if I'm paraphrasing it correctly. One of the things we suggest or they are taking back to talk about amongst their staff is the idea of the 40%, because we may not get the officer at the day one. We may take 6 years to get the officer, so maybe we collect that 40% for 6 years or 5 years or 2 years just because the call may come to that point. We're not disputing any of their statistical. So they're going to look at that, and we're just waiting to hear back. So for as long as it takes to bring that officer to meet the call volume, then they would get the 0.6 sales tax off that property to meet that. And that's how we're trying to talk through it.
And then, did we hear back from UPD?
So we have not heard back from UPD yet since that meeting.
But that's what I'm asking. When was the meeting where they came back with the 0%?
This was probably 2 weeks ago. So we'll follow up with Andrew and see, you know, how the dialogue's going there. And then UFA, we have a board meeting scheduled the end of this month.
21st.
Yes. And we probably should talk a little offline. We were working on an interlocal with their consultant attorney. We need to know who we should.
We don't have an attorney yet, so we'll be delaying that. We hope to appoint someone on the 21st, and then after that we'll be tasking the attorney to work with you.
So should we move this
schedule? You can certainly come and present. I think it's always helpful to have a board receive the presentation first and not expect them to make a decision on it at that meeting. And then we'll let the attorney review it and provide input and consult for the board. And then that decision would be in March. And I spoke with Gordon about that and just let him know of this delay. And I think this is a better process to have them hear it first and then vote on it later anyway.
Thanks. And then with the Jordan School District, they've had the moratorium on the CDAs. That moratorium comes up in next week or so, mid-February.
Didn't they approve Riverton's?
They did.
So apparently that moratorium already ended.
But from what I understand, they approved Riverton's.
And then immediately went into
right after that went into moratorium.
A moratorium of
right after.
Like 2 weeks? I mean, how long ago did they
No,
did
it
they
was approve? 6 months ago.
Yeah, it's been a while ago.
So they approved Riverton's, went into a moratorium, and turned down whom in that 6 month period?
No, they approved Riverton's. Yeah, then they approved Facebook, and we got a bunch of crap for it. And then
that's what it was. The Facebook was a shutdown.
Put a moratorium.
The moratorium's up though in a week.
Okay.
So yeah. We had a good discussion with them.
So we're also waiting to see what happens with the legislature there.
Yeah, so Heather brought up a good point. There's some new laws coming about the school. I think Senator Stevens.
Two bad laws.
Yeah, two bad ones.
Two bad bills.
So
we agree.
Yeah. So if that takes place, then obviously we'll just start thinking.
Well, and just so we're clear on the record, 139 and 142 is what we're talking about that would completely carve out. It was either carve out the school district in its entirety or a portion, which would make these projects completely insolvent.
Yeah.
It would be.
We agree. Those aren't very good deals.
Amount of property tax they collect, absolutely.
So we will meet with their finance committee once their moratorium is up. We start there and then they make a recommendation to their board. So that is where we're at. We will start, we will bring all the interlocals back to the RBA once we have those. So we can do it all at once.
Good job, Heather. You guys want to take
what
a break?
What about that mosquito district? We didn't put
that 0% there.
Well, how much? Zero?
We did zero.
We never asked that.
Yeah, I know.
It's cheaper to spend.
It's like $2.
I believe in filling the seats.
Thanks, Heather. Let's take a break.